Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soci.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soci. The show is available, obviously, as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes, and like all of the programs here at WFYI, available on Spotify. Well, friends, it's been a week. Just like any other week. No, there's been... Anyway, we'll fill you in. But we have company. Oh, Roger. We're not alone.
Yes.
Yep. We're not even a minute in. The shows are going off the rails.
Sounds like steam going off in here.
You recognize the voice. Here's his intro.
The blackest brother in the galaxy. Nubian God.
What's a Nubian?
Will someone shut that man up?
Never! Never! I do hateful things for which people love me, and I do lovable things for which they hate me. I'm admired for my detestability.
It is a newspaper's duty to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable.
I don't like that fellow.
Abdul Karim Shabazz is in the house, friends.
I forgot what that sounded like. Long to be here, old friend. It really is.
Right, man, how you doing? Yeah, this is your pledge dollars at work, friends.
That's right.
Go, go, Gophers.
Oh, and by the way,
1776. And
I wore for you my NPR.
Yes.
WFYI socks.
Yes, he did, friends. Actually, hold on. Keep that up while I take a picture. Boy, this is happening. Is this happening, friends? Hold on a moment.
I feel like Burt Reynolds in an old underwear commercial.
Okay, you got your. I can't believe I have to do this, but you have your male model things mixed up. Burt Reynolds posed nude for Cosmopolitan. Jim Palmer was, and several baseball players were the jockey spokes models. Why do I know that? Don't ask. So, this is actually the second time the Burt Reynolds centerfold has been brought up this week.
Yeah, really?
While we were at rehearsal for Elizabeth Rex, which is happening in November at the Arts for Lawrence at the Theater on the Fort, there was a famous story because, of course, the Burt Reynolds centerfold for Cosmopolitan. It's been often imitated. He's on the bear rug, and the hands over the.
Yeah,
the euphemism, I believe, is a script said, and it caused a big sensation. And there was I remember reading in People magazine, there was a restaurant in Texas. Oh, hello, a thought. There was a restaurant in Texas in the 70s that had in the ladies' room had blown up the centerfold to cover a wall.
Wow!
And there was a plate over the area that was covered, and. It said, of course, don't lift. If the plate was lifted, a bell would go off in the restaurant.
Wow.
Yeah. So got to find that. I don't know. If there's People magazine archives out there or just go to your local library.
You imagine somebody with a tape recorder just said bell ringing on and on.
Right. Exactly. So, yeah, Abdul's here with me because, yes, we're a part of Elizabeth Rex, which is happening in November. It's a part of Indie Bard Fest and... I haven't seen anything new. I saw Dune, but we'll talk about that next week. But there's some stuff that I wanted to have Abdul in studio to talk about because it's just kind of old fodder for us.
Oh, by the way, we did see To Die For.
You mean No Time to Die?
No Time to Die.
I was like, you watched a Nicole Kidman film from the
90s? Well, watch that too, yeah. Yeah, watch No Time to Die. we were actually, not to give away the spoiler or anything, it was actually really good.
I saw it. Lynn and I saw it. Mrs. Sosie and I saw it last week. And I'm gonna word this carefully. When we were in the multiplex, in our local multiplex, I heard the song used in the closing credits, which kind of gave it away for me. There is a song that is used that was the theme song of an earlier Bond film. And if you know this particular Bond film, you know the significance of the song and the plot point that happens in that film. I will leave it at that.
Okay.
It is the Daniel Craig farewell tour. It
yes.
really is. I mean, they hit everything that you want from a Bond film as far as the action and the gadgetry.
And the car.
And he gets one liner. He gets one quip. He doesn't do a whole lot of quips.
He's not Roger Moore.
He's not Roger Moore, but he gets one in here just in time. So, so it's kind of what it covers the bases on that. One of the great things, and I'm sure you're with me, is hearing your wife chuckle over the ridiculousness of what they watch. The motorcycle jump,
yes.
for one. And I, we were talking afterwards, and I try not to send them explain, but it is sort of an homage to an actual jump that happened in The Great Escape.
Steve McQueen.
Well, Steve McQueen says he did it, or he really wants to, but no, that was actually a stunt person, we know. But it is still a very impressive stunt. Now you can CG that, and that's fine, but it's a Bond film. It's supposed to be that silly. So
the only, I would say, criticism I had was that I don't think they did enough with what's-his-face, Remy's villain character.
Yeah, Remy Malek doesn't get to do a whole lot.
Yeah.
He's just got to be quiet and don't blink. Yeah, that you know, a great hero's got to have a great villain. And I think following Javier Bardem and into a lesser degree Christoph Waltz, and Waltz has like one scene in here, and it's always nice to see Christoph Waltz. But not a lot for the villain.
There are no Moonraker.
There is no Moonraker. The other part, and it becomes a part of the climax, is you're gonna be, I think. Watching this film will show what kind of Bond fan you are over the concept of him with a family.
Yes.
Just leave it. And I think that might be a deal breaker for some. It seemed a little much for me personally.
Actually, I'm surprised that over 6 years, James Bond doesn't have more children.
Well, he's not an NBA player. He's not B.B. King or Screaming Jay Hawkins or, you know.
Or Magic Johnson.
Sorry,
Will Chamberlain.
Yeah, Will.
Still Chamberlain.
Well, we don't know how many he pollinated. Well, multiplied.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Pollinization, that's always been the talk. But, I don't know about the other stuff, so. Anyway, it's we saw it on the big screen. I don't think it's available streaming, so I'm assuming were things.
Yeah, we saw it. At the movie theater out in Plainfield.
Things were safe and cool.
Yeah,
and
things were good.
Okay.
Nice size movie theater. So
same
got my,
here.
Got my seats. Got my seats right in the middle.
Did you buy all the seats around you so nobody
didn't have to do it this time around? Because when I went to reserve my seats, the rows in front of us and the back of us were pretty much empty, just a couple of people. So that was good enough.
Yep. So it was a good Saturday night. It was. Yeah. I haven't had a Saturday night with the missus in a while because of plays and things. Which, speaking of which, Indie.
By
Bard
the way,
Fest
we saw it Sunday afternoon.
You what?
We saw Bond
no
Sunday afternoon.
Okay.
Because we went and saw another play on Saturday night.
Yes, you saw Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? Good setup there. It was assist for Shabazz. Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, which is a part of the prestige project of Indie Bard Fest, which is happening at the Cat in Carmel. It is happening, at the time of this recording, Friday night, Saturday night at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday at 2 p.m. These are final three performances of Edward Albee's controversial classic, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? Full disclosure, directed by yours truly.
And by the way, as one critic said, nothing good happens after 2 a.m.
Yeah, that is true. That is, somebody did get that. So thanks for coming, man. I hope you, well, I kind of joke in the speech. Hope you enjoy it.
Well, it's a heck of a romance. It's a heck of a rom-com.
Oh. It is. It is a dark and twisted romantic comedy.
Yeah. It's now, just so everybody knows, it's 3 hours long.
It's a little over.
It's 3 hours. It's a little over.
It's when I was approached by the producers and they wanted a running time, for the website, and I really wanted to say, not a number, just longer. Just write longer than the movie, which it is.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, like I said, I was fine with it. It was an emotional roller coaster because knowing all the actors in the play, I can just imagine how mentally exhausting they would have to be after each performance, just to keep that keep that emotional level.
Yeah,
just...
even Afton, who a little inside baseball, Afton Shepherd, who we've all worked with and we will be working with, a lot of the time in the play she is spent on a couch listening. And those who are not experienced on the stage, that is also an exhausting task and a lot of work. So, and I felt bad because I checked in with her after a rehearsal one evening and she was exhausted and I was like, well, oh my God! And then she told me and I said, oh no, only go about 50% until I tell you to, because
it's a lot more work to sit there and pay attention than it is to actually act.
Correct. You have to be in the moment. You have to be in the scene. It's great couch acting by Ms. Shepherd. And I have to give shout out to my buddy Leslie, who had to do the same thing in the show I directed in Richmond called The Christians. I wrote great chair acting. She's on the stage. She's on the stage almost as much as the entire time as the guy who plays the preacher, my buddy Marty. Anyway, so yeah. Now I'm not gonna ask you about your resume in this, but I said before that your relationship histories will reflect how you experience this play. How you doing, old friend?
Actually, I'm doing quite
okay,
well, because
all right.
I wouldn't put up with that crap. First of all, I ain't going to nobody's house at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, this,
unless.
And this is why Mr. Albee's lawyer said we couldn't have an African-American in a show. That's right. White hunky.
Yeah, it's like, no, I'm not going to 2 o'clock in the morning. Like, no, let's not with just four people. No. Not the kid. No.
Got a witness. We're foreshadowing what we're going to be talking about in a little bit.
I want you to run around on the roof three times and jump on my face.
I can't stage that. I'm trying, but no, we can't. We can't do that.
No, but I thought it was. No, the actors were really good. Like I said, the play length it is what it is. But I thought they did a really good job, and I thought it was a really good reflection of the director, who I kind of heard he's actually
really chess like precision.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is gonna. I'm just gonna make everyone sick after hearing that. So.
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised. It was like One Night in Bangkok. It really was.
Wow. Thank you. Very good. Oh man.
Yeah, it's going to be one of those sociologies.
It totally is. So, yeah, anyway, the final three performances at the Cat in Carmel. Go to IndieBardFest.com for all the information. You can also find out about Elizabeth Rex, which Abdul and I are part of, which opens November 5th, my daughter's birthday. We got that going. And while we're on the shameless plug and movie stuff, here's a movie stuff. Now, we got a little bit of stage sociology. This Saturday night, Films at the Fort. This is at the theater at the Fort, at Fort Harrison in Lawrence, Indiana. There is
double feature.
Well, it's a double feature, but there's separate tickets.
Okay.
And it's free, friends. This is here. So Jay Hemphill, who we are also working with in Elizabeth Rex, you get a chance. It's a lovely little converted theater, seats about 200. And yeah, I know your screen is big and, you know, it's not the screen, it's what you show with it. But a double feature, 7 o'clock on Saturday the 16th. At 7 o'clock, they're showing Hocus Pocus, which is a big cult following. And here's the thing. Now I'll get to the second feature. I remember seeing Hocus Pocus when it opened.
Wow.
This movie opened in July of 1993, and I was baffled, as were a lot of people, on why are you doing this now? Why this should be in October. This screams Halloween movie. And I'm not getting into the whole Die Hard's Christmas movie nonsense, but it just seems that. And as I was doing research, because I'll be there with Jay Hemphill, I'll be doing the Robert Osborne, Ben Menkowitz TCM thing. So
I would like to take you on a strange trip.
Charles Gray.
How strange.
No, by the way, underrated Blofeld in Diamonds Are Forever. So anyway, I found out, because Hocus Pocus is a Disney film, that they did not want it to conflict with another Halloween theme film that they were going to open in October of 93, The Nightmare Before
Christmas.
So I'm like, okay, that makes sense. So I take back some of the snark.
Yeah.
Some of the snark. But it has now become a cult favorite.
Bette
Midler, Kathy Najimy, Sarah Jessica Parker. It's directed by Kenny Ortega. This is the film he did after Newsies. among and High School Musical and all that. So anyway, but there's a big following, and so you get to see it on a big screen. That'll be cool. And then at 10 o'clock, the original,
yes.
George A. Romero's Night of the Living Dead. He almost, or as Abdul calls it, he almost makes it.
Yep, almost. Almost.
Almost.
And he's shot by law enforcement at the very end. You want to talk about some foreshadowing going on?
White law enforcement. anybody seen zombies?
I know zombies around here.
Cool breeze, you see? Yeah. They got some white zombies here, too. So, yeah, the original George A. Romero classic. This is the, if you're a fan of zombies, you have to see Night of the Living
Dead. You have to see Night of the Living
Dead. So, and if you're not, and now here's a chance to see it on a big screen in Lawrence at 10 o'clock on Saturday. So go check it out. You get to see me. And yes, Abdul, I've already talked to theaters about us hosting some nonsense. We'll see.
Yes.
We'll see how that goes.
That reminds me, because Halloween's right around the corner, I have to go ahead and replace my Facebook profile picture.
Blackula?
No.
Papa Shango?
No, Night of the Living Dead guy.
Let's actually get his name as opposed to Night of the Living Dead guy.
Night of the Living Dead black guy.
I'm not calling him that. So, Dwayne Jones. Dwayne Jones, who plays Ben in Night of the Living Dead.
Now, does he spell his name D-W or D-U?
D-U.
Huh. Mm. That way you can't tell right away.
Wow. this was kind of a big deal. So, one of the things I love about Night of the Living Dead is, like local television or regional television, there were regional filmmakers, and George A. Romero was the Pittsburgh connection, basically.
Wow.
That whole area where he would shoot, and he is looked upon as kind of a film icon in the state of Pennsylvania, especially in the western part of the state. But all the cheapy movies, you had filmmaker Bill Rabane, who I just talked about on the show earlier, who shot numerous movies up in Wisconsin, but every area had its kind of regional filmmaker, and they were able to make a movie, and if they played it in the region, and if they could get it outside the region or get picked up by a bigger distributor, bully for them. So, and that's kind of what happened with Romero in this film.
Yeah, because I was Living Dead. I remember the first time I saw it, I was a little kid. I was like, what in the world?
Right?
It's like, hey, that's like actually showing the zombie eating the flesh
off
the bone.
There was that, because really the zombie films didn't become the zombie films until this. There had been zombie films prior, but in the 40s, and there was a lot of voodoo and the black arts. I'm sorry, the dark arts.
Yeah.
But it wasn't and they would probably walk in slow motion. They had that, but yeah, no brain eating really until Night of the Living Dead.
Not even with the King's material with Zombie Jamboree.
Oh, is that your annual request on the show on Saturday night?
Yes, it is.
I love to dance with skeletons.
Could you match me with a zombie wife? Yes.
Although, Screamin' Jay Hawkins will make its appearance, audio appearance at the beginning of the house party on the 30th. So anyway, back to Dwayne Jones. So this was a big deal. So you have, the whole thing of folks trapped in a house trying to fight their way, and Dwayne is kind of taking charge on this. Well, he almost, like you said, he almost makes it.
Yep.
Let's see.
Was the woman named Barbara?
Yes, they're coming to get you, Barbara. So, hold on. American actor, theater director, best known for his role in Ben. I'm now reading off Wikipedia. Friends, these are your pledge dollars at work. He was later director of the McGuire Theater at the State University of New York at Old Westbury and the artistic director of the Richard Allen Center for Culture and Art in Manhattan. So, let's see. Prior to becoming an actor, he was a Phelps Stokes Exchange Scholar in Niger and taught literature at Long Island University. So created the English language training programs for the Peace Corps and helped design the Harlem Preparatory School, where he headed the English
department. And the thing he's probably most famous for is being the black guy in Night of the Living Dead.
Right. The first time an African-American actor was cast as a star of a horror film, and one of the first times in American cinema where an important role was given to a non-white racial minority when the script did not explicitly call for one. At the time, casting a black man as a hero in the film where all the other characters were white was potentially controversial. Potentially was.
And this was 1968. Yeah.
While some saw casting a significant, director George A. Romero stated, quote, Dwayne simply gave the best audition. So there you go. Huh. Look at that.
And also, wasn't there like a Saturday Night Live spoof with Garrett Morris?
Well, of course, there probably was.
Yeah.
But I also want to mention this man also appeared in the really underrated horror film, and I need to get a copy of it, Ganja and Hess. from 1973. Also appeared in Losing Ground.
Ganja and Hess.
Ganja and Hess.
Like,
you should look
like a play of Porgy and Bess.
You have to look at it. You have to look at it. This might be another film. I want you to look up the trailer. Just
okay.
Like I had Can-Can look up the trailer for Sugar Hill. You look up the trailer for Ganja and Hess. It could be hosting material.
Sweet. I see a double
feature.
Back.
And we'll get to that in a little bit. So, so kudos to Dwayne Jones of Night of the Living Dead fame. Okay, so we talked a little bit about No Time to Die. We talked a little bit about Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf and Elizabeth Rex. So what movies have you been watching recently? Well, I haven't been able to watch anything new except for Dune. That's next week. But I
How
did,
was that?
Dune?
Yeah.
You have to listen to next week's show.
Okay.
Did you see David Lynch's? Did you see the original?
Yes.
How long ago?
A long time ago.
It's going to help.
Okay.
Don't revisit it.
Well,
I know some of the critics in the circle have revisited that, and I don't need to.
Well, no, because they're totally different. They're made in totally different time periods. So
right.
Going back and watch, that's like, it's like watching the original Planet of the Apes and going back and watching the 2001 Planet of the Apes.
No,
like,
no, thank you.
No, don't do that.
No.
But my issue with Dune is it feels long.
It is. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you're correct there.
Okay, yeah.
No real spoilers on that.
Yeah, it feels like, okay, all right, do I want to go see this? Okay, do I get like 3 days to kill?
That's also a film, 3 days to kill.
Yeah, it's like,
It opens next week. You got time to think about that.
Okay,
so.
Just like the Eternals.
Marvel's The Eternals.
Yeah, yeah. Marvel's The Eternals. Part of me really wants to go see that. Part of me wants to just stay the hell away from it.
Well, you know, it's out there.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, Time Life Home Video has put out a...
Now, folks, here's why we're really here today.
Yeah, well, among other things. Time Life Video, Richard Pryor. Yeah, it's... I am very thankful I got this. It's the ultimate Richard Pryor uncensored. And this is... a 13 DVD collection, friends. This is a lot. But these are, of course, the same folks that gave us the same box sets with Robin Williams, Dolly Parton, Laughin', and now I'm going through Richard Pryor. And one of the, if you're a collector, if you're a big Pryor fan and a completist, this film has all three concert films, plus JoJo Dancer Your Life is Calling. Four episodes of the Richard Pryor Show, a slew of television appearances, and
does it have a toy?
No, we're gonna get to the films of Richard Pryor in a little bit. I'm surprised I've not done this with Abdul as long as we've known each other.
Almost 20
but
years.
We're gonna break down the Richard Pryor filmography in a little bit. But as I was revisiting, and there's a really cool documentary I'd not seen before. I believe it was made for the collection called I Am Richard Pryor, which has, you know, a number of talking heads as well as, you know, fellow comics and actors and talking about his impact in the business and as far as comedy. So revisiting the first three concert films. So you and I are of a similar age range.
Yep.
And Richard Pryor Live in Concert, the first one, as we call it, that was on cable a lot. And, it was
and your parents wouldn't let you watch it.
Yeah, I would say, did you have to sneak around as well?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because I have my brother is 6 years older than me, so he had the Pryor and Carlin albums. And, yeah, as soon as the parents leave, you put those on.
Or as soon as the kids go to bed, you put the Richard Pryor on.
Right,
the
there's that. And then listening to it, or if it came on TV, or you rented it without telling them.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. Did you ever get caught?
Yeah, but my parents were like, but I was the oldest male, so I was the more mature one.
So you're the one who started it.
Yeah. So for me, it was like, okay, but my parents were like, hey, your little brothers, we'd rather you not have them. Like, yes, Dad. Okay,
so the siblings are, that's because you're with them.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So, and the first one's just, it sets the gold standard for comedy performances we see on TV.
Now, which one was his first one?
Sunset Strip was two. This was the shooting in the car and the heart attack.
Oh, yeah.
So, friends, that's the other thing was Pryor. I mean, we if you don't know, you hopefully should, you know, is comedy through tragedy. You take your or
Dave Chappelle.
Yeah, I haven't watched that yet, and I've been hearing a lot about it.
I'm actually going to watch it this weekend sometime.
Yeah. So there's there's been folks trying to do, well, the comparison of his change in attitudes compared to Pryor's, which we're going to get to in a moment. But this is the first concert film is the one, where he talks about getting arrested for killing his wife's car and having a heart attack. And that's,
they don't just shoot cars.
Right. And the timing of it was great. You know, think about it. There was no 24-hour news at this time. And
No social media.
So we knew he went to jail, and we knew he had a heart attack, and now he's going to do a stand-up routine based on that. That takes serious stones. And I think that is what I think comics today strive for. Probably not, hopefully not to go through the hellish experiences, but to have that level of fun.
But it's comedy through tragedy.
And I love the
And it doesn't work unless everybody knows what you're talking about.
Right. And so the stuff about boxing, the stuff in the woods. See, it's not all about sex and words. The stuff in the woods is great.
Snake.
Family, yeah, family dinners. There's the family dinner thing. You know, hey, legs on my almonds. I mean, it's one of those. Abdul and I could probably do the entire show. We will not. It's not the last 10 minutes of XMT. Oh, we're done with movies. What are we going to do now?
Exactly. That's the last 10 minutes.
So there was that. That was the first one. And then the infamous Live on the Sunset Strip, also known as the fire one.
Yeah.
The
one What's in, this? The lights one in the match. Red What's this? Rich Pryor running down the street.
What a way to end it. Perfect way to end it. I'd forgotten that he did two nights on the Sunset Strip, and the first night did not go well.
Huh.
And in fact, he stopped early and just not in it. So, yes, same thing.
When you're
thing.
On fire and you're running down the street,
people get out of your way.
Except when old Bob walked up, he's like, hey, buddy, can I get a light?
Did 104.3. that aspect of it, he had set himself on fire while freebasing, and then here it comes. How's he going to handle it? And I remember, I think it was Siskel and Ebert on Sneak Previews back when it was on PBS, thought he should have been nominated for it.
Wow.
It was that good. And to be fair, if Richard, not Richard Widmark, Give Him Hell, Harry. James Whitmore. If James Whitmore can get a nomination for the film version of his one-man show, Give Him Hell, Harry, why not Pryor on the Sunset Strip?
Yeah. So. Because I remember the one thing I remember as clear as it was yesterday, like I said, just the fire scene when he takes out the book of matches. And,
just
what's this?
At the very end. Yeah, Richard, because we all did it. Well, I was in middle school when that film came out, and yeah, every knucklehead with a match who thought they were
Switch
funny.
Pryor right down the street. Oh.
And so there's that kind of, there was also that great thing of, yeah, you're not that clever.
Oh, yeah.
Pryor, because Pryor did it. Pryor probably was the first one to think about it and did it on screen.
Yep.
Did it and had a bigger audience than us in the schoolyard. So, but this one also, the Playboy Bunny material, which I still kind of steal to this day. Well, if I can't be with her, I'm going to. This couch. the work with him working with in organized crime, in mob joints, basically. The first great section of him going to Africa and that story, which leads to the change. So, friends, here's a little bit of pop culture history from the two old guys on the front stoop. When Richard Pryor announced during the Sunset Strip show, his last day in Africa, and I'm going to paraphrase, you know, he's looking around before he's getting on the plane, and he says, what do I see? And his brain says, black people. And then he asks himself, are there any? That's what we say. And he says, no, because there aren't any. And Pryor made the declaration right then and there.
He was never going to use the N-word ever again.
And we got the memo. That was the memo. So... And of course, he said, I don't want to hear any of my hip white friends trying to be hip, calling me, doing those jokes.
Yeah.
We got that. That's where it started. That's really where it started for, well, most of us.
Yeah, but even though, but I'll still say what something I said was still one of the best albums he ever did.
And that Crazy and Bicentennial, which won a Grammy, if I remember correctly. He's won several Grammys. So that declaration. And then waits until the last half hour to talk about freebasing. And, man, it's to come up with that material based on a really life-low moment is amazing.
Well, to me, that shows a depth of just what a comic genius Richard Pryor was. Because he didn't have to make up anything. He just basically took his life from a little kid growing up in the cat house, you know, in Peoria, through the Africa thing, through getting in jail. Of course, he never really talked about his relationship with Margot Kidder.
No, we didn't get into that. Well, then again, I think he represented it by white honky, which we talked about his at that time his current wife.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he kind of skirts away from the relationships, and trust me, there are plenty of documentaries of all the ladies talking about being with him.
Yep.
From Pam Grier to Margot Kidder to Cicely Tyson.
And there was actually one bit. It wasn't a comedy bit, but it was actually a true story. It was told by his agent. His agent is home, and the phone rings like 2 o'clock in the morning. It's like, hello? It's like, hey, it's Richard. Like, yeah, I need you to get over here right now. It's like, what? Like, I need you to get over here right now. Like, but Rich, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. Are you in jail? Like, no, you need to get over to my house right now or you're fired. So he gets to the house, Richard Pryor's mansion. You know, the door's unlocked. You know, runs upstairs. There's Richard Pryor with a big bowl, fruit bowl of cocaine and 2 hookers. And he says, Richard, what's going on? Like, I just wanted you to see this. Now you can leave.
That's slightly better than the how much. Bring it over. Count it again. Wow. Yeah. That was Richard. That was Richard. So that's Richard Pryor on the Sunset Strip. Richard Pryor here and now is the Godfather 3 of the three comic films. And now part of it is, and I don't want it to happen to him, but there was no tragic event to which he could wrap the show around. It's done in New Orleans. Also in this film, what I forgot is he talks to the audience more. So I have to give kudos to the editors of the first two concert films. I think also at this point, people were just yelling stuff so he could bounce
Mud Bone.
Yeah, so he could bounce him as a – I mean, and you know, some folks just like to heckle and be shot at verbally by the comic. There are YouTube channels now devoted to, you know, how a comic takes down a heckler. And,
which I've actually had to do before.
Yeah. Do you remember do you have a standard collective arsenal that you use, or
just
the
classic? Hey, you know, hey, dude, I'm working. I don't go to your street corner and try to tell you how to do your job. So you don't tell me how to do mine. Just the classic.
Yep. Yeah, cool. So there's that in there. There's still some funny stuff. I mean, about being in New Orleans. He also revisits material in an adjusted way. He does another thing on Africa. He said he was gonna retire Mule Bone in. On the Sunset Strip, and he brings him back. So it's and the 80s, as we'll get into with Richard's films, kind of coasting a little bit. There's still some funny stuff in Here and Now.
This water's cold.
Yeah, but it's not even in the same category as the first two. So, and all right. So anyway, that's Richard Pryor.
And it's one thing I noticed with major comedians. They'll have like, you know, they'll have the circuit phase, they'll have the concert footage phase, then they'll go like the television, the movie phase, and somewhere between the movies and the television, it gets a little uneven.
Yep.
In the performances, with the exception of, I would say Bill Cosby did a much better job on television than he did after the Let's Do It Again.
Okay. All right. Yep. And also comics who go from the stage, their stage, to the screen. A lot of times don't get to utilize 100% of what they're best at, which we're going to get to in a little bit with the Pryor stuff. But the Ultimate Richard Pryor Collection Uncensored, now available on Time Life Home Video. So, Abdul, I go to IMDb. We're going to go through the films of Richard Pryor. And now, whether you've seen it or not, like it or not, I mean, that's just what we do. Yeah. It's not a trust. There's no card that's going to be taken away. This isn't a quiz. It's, you know, you're not going to get racked over the knuckles if you haven't seen The Busybody,
thank you, Sister Sosa.
The first title from 1967, The Busybody, which I don't know if I have this or not. Sid Caesar stars as a bumbling right-hand man of mob boss Robert Ryan, who is sent to find a corpse buried in a suit lined with stolen mob money. Directed by William Castle.
Wow.
Of the Tingler fame, among others.
Yay.
Yeah. He's in that. I've seen it. You're all right. Wild in the Streets from 1968, which was a favorite of Ed Johnsonat, Sky Point to Ed. This is a parody of the counterculture scene in 1968. A young man gains significant political influence as the leader of a counterculture rock band with his rallying cry of voting rights for teenagers. Pryor plays the drummer. Can't drum.
No.
So, also noted faces, Shelley Winters, Hal Holbrook, Christopher Jones plays the star in this, and Ed Begley Sr., and it's
Shelley Winters and Hal Holbrook, it's like a Clint Eastwood movie.
Maybe, but this is 1968, and I would say have some cocktails before going watching that. Now, also listed it's listed as made, but it never really shot. And they talk about it in the collection. But in 1969, Pryor directed a short film called Uncle Tom's Fairy Tales.
Huh.
And on the DVD collection, filmmaker Penelope Spheres, who worked on it as a lackey, as a production grip, talks about it. It was Pryor wanted to make a short film about a white man who was abducted by black men and put on trial for all white crimes. One representative. Pryor played the prosecuting attorney and the defense attorney in an all-black jury. And he shot about a half an hour of it and didn't think it was a comedy and literally ripped the film to shreds.
Wow.
So there is about an on the DVD collection, which I just mentioned from Time Life, there's about an hour of Penelope Spheres talking about the experience with some outtakes of the film itself. But yeah.
Uncle Tom's Fairy Tales.
So there you go. Start looking into that.
Jack of the Bean Pie Stalk.
Mm-hmm. 1970, a film called The Finks, which he appears in as himself. A rock band becomes embroiled in foreign affairs when they're sent on a tour of Albania as a cover to find hostages in a remote castle held by the communist enemies of the U.S. Directed by Lee Katzin. There's some animated sequences in it. He just appears as himself. There's getting a blank over here, Abdul.
Like, what the hell?
I know. We're going to. You've got to walk it like you talk it, or you'll lose that beat. It's not a play, church. It's not a church play from 1971. You got to walk it like you talk it, or you lose that beat, where he's listed as playing Wino.
Otherwise known as Don't Get on the Lord's Bus if you ain't got exact change.
This oddball counterculture comedy drama follows Zalman King through a series of kooky misadventures while he searches for his life's purpose in New York City. Written and directed by Peter Locke, also has Alan Garfield of That Guy fame. By the way, me reading off IMDb, your pledge dollars at work. So, yeah, Liz Torres is in this, Roz Kelly, Robert Downey Sr.
Is it my imagination, or in the late 60s and early 70s, movies were either really, really good, like classic, like MASH, or just crap?
I think that's any era, Abdul. It's just a matter of finding the finding the dogs playing poker with the Rembrandts. Steve Landisberg is also in this. Are you fans of Barney Miller? So, but these are very inexpensive. We could tell. These are the films that are not crippling the studios in the 1960s. Okay, we finally get 1972, his big breakthrough, playing Piano Man in Lady Sings the Blues with Diana Ross
yes,
as Billie Holiday. Adds some much-needed humor in this as not really the sidekick, but accompanying this for Billie Holiday. And also...
wasn't Billy Dee Williams in that, too?
Yes, he was. And, you know, this was, I believe, the Dark Gable headlines that he got for being... And I hate to say it, I think Billy Dee may have had better hair than Diana Ross in both their films. Mahogany.
With that cockalee.
Oh, he was...
with straightened out your hair.
Handsome man. Handsome man. But, yeah, so, and this was, and there was talk that they thought Pryor should have got a supporting actor nomination for this. But it was comic relief that was needed. And, of course, he also indulged in Lady Day's habits at that time. So that's 1972.
So this is one where Billy Dee Williams gives a speech?
Yes, there's
what
that.
What do you do? Will you stand by your man for your community?
No, that's Mahogany. That's Mahogany. That's a film. What's the scarier credit? Costume designs by Diana Ross or directed by Barry Gordy
or Anthony Perkins.
Yeah,
as a
psychotic photographer. Yeah. So, well, speaking of Billy Dee Williams, he and Pryor team up again for the Billy Dee Williams film. I'm sorry. A year later, we'll get to that. But Pryor teams up as plays Slim for Max Julian in 1973's The Mac, blaxploitation classic. Oh, yes, with Michael Campus directing, starring Max Julian, who also developed it, of Goldie the Pimp.
And... No, just a reminder, folks, people like Richard Pryor have to go through these films before you get to Stir Crazy.
We're getting there.
Before you get to Hear No Evil, See
No
Evil.
We'll get there.
Trust me, there's a whole lot of crap.
I like The Mac. Now, if you remember the Pimp of the Year scenes in I'm Gonna Get You Sucker, they borrowed those from The Mac. And Antonio Fargas.
With the fish and the shoes.
Yeah, that's also, you could thank The Mac for that. So that's, and I have it. Great soundtrack by Willie Hutch. Okay, same year, 1973, Some Call It Loving. A woman who's been asleep for years is part of a carnival that sells her kisses for a buck. A lonely jazz musician buys her. Once awake, the two of them and his two girlfriends hook up, but sometimes dreams are better than reality. Also starring Zalman King. No, no way. Let's see, anybody else? Pat Priest, for you fans of the Munsters. Veronica Anderson, Tisa Farrow, Richard Pryor, Carol White. Oh, man. And Logan Ramsey. So... is that even on video? That's written and directed by James B. Harris. Also, 1973, as I mentioned, hit with Billy Dee Williams as a star, and Richard Pryor gets to be comic relief. A federal agent whose daughter dies of a heroin overdose is determined to destroy the drug ring that supplied her. He recruits various people whose lives have been torn apart by the drug trade and trains them.
This reminds me of the spook that's set by the front door with the Magnificent
Could
Seven.
Be. They all leave for France to track down and destroy the ring. Directed by Sidney Fury, who also did Lady Sings the Blues. That's kind of what that is. Actually, that's a good pitch.
Yeah.
So, Billy Dee also has great hair in this. That's 1973. We moved to 1974. Pryor also had a good run of getting a lot of money for doing like a day's work. Case in point, Sharp Eye Washington and Uptown Saturday Night.
I remember Uptown Saturday Night.
Yep.
My parents loved that movie.
Would you say, is it the best collaboration between Sidney Poitier and Bill Cosby? Let's do it again. Piece of the action. This.
I would say let's do it again.
Okay. All right. Well, that's true.
I say let's do it.
So, yeah, that's 1974. And then 1975, there's also times where the director will not direct him. They just roll the camera, let him do Richard stuff. And that's what Fred Williamson did in the Western Adios Amigo.
Wow.
Where Pryor had a few days of shooting where Pryor, because, you know, black cowboys, kind of rare, apparently. And Pryor and Williamson's paths cross several times, and Pryor gets in the town, starts some shenanigans, leaves town. Williamson shows up and takes the brunt of it. That's basically the film for 90 minutes.
Yeah, that's Blazing Saddles too.
Electric Boogaloo. So, yeah, there was that. Then... one of the films I had Billy Dee Williams sign when he made an appearance on Fox 59 AM, the Bingo Long Traveling All-Stars and Motor Kings.
Say what?
The traveling black baseball movie with Billy Dee Williams as the leader. James Earl Jones is photo negative of Babe Ruth. Pryor plays Charlie Snow, who tries to pass himself off as an Indian and a Cuban instead of black. But there is that aspect.
Is Red Fox in there?
No, he's not in this one. We'll get to him soon. But this is one where they had these traveling black baseball teams in the Negro Leagues and before the Negro Leagues. So it's based on an actual concept, but it's a fictional film. 1976, another one day's work, Daddy Rich and Car Wash, the Church of Divine Ryan Economics.
If I wasn't a preacher, I'd come down there and kick you.
With the Pointer Sisters backing them up. This was one of the first films I recorded off television.
Wow.
Yeah. Car Wash. Imagine a Robert Altman film, but instead it's set at a car wash in South Central Los Angeles in 1976. It's a day in the life of a car wash.
Actually, imagine a film that you'd see on TBS at about 1 o'clock in the morning on Saturday.
It's still good. Still enjoy it. Lots of familiar faces in this, from Antonio Fargas to Professor Irwin Corey. This is Ivan Dixon, for you fans of Hogan's Heroes. One of Bill Duke's early films. Just a slew of familiar faces.
And what's his face? who was in Predator, who got killed.
Bill Duke.
Yeah, Bill Duke.
Bill
yeah.
Duke, yeah. So,
he's also in Tyler Perry's The Oval.
Well, of course he is. Yeah. All right. So now we get a new step where Pryor has already been kind of the sidekick or the second banana in a number of films. He gets upgraded to a second banana in a bigger film, 1976's Silver Streak.
Yep.
First time working with Gene Wilder and... a joke that we can't. It's a train ride from New York, from Los Angeles to Chicago. Wilder's character gets caught up in a murder plot with The Prisoner, for you fans of The Prisoner. Joe Clayburgh's along for the ride. And Pryor plays Grover, a thief who gets pulled into the situation and helps out Wilder's character when the feds are looking for him in a train stop by applying shoe polish to his face. Mm. This was 1976, friends.
It's blackface. Everybody did it back then.
Yes, apparently. Then a decade later came Soul Man. We'll not talk about that.
Hey, I like Soul Man.
Did you really?
Yes, I did.
Okay. I'm not going to host it. Well, you can host it. No.
It's the 80s. Everybody loves black people. The Cosby Show is great.
But see Thomas Howell and shoe polish.
James Earl Jones.
They're
the tanning pills.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, my faux pas.
Because Leslie Nielsen is in there too.
That's right. Oh my gosh.
He plays the butthole landlord.
Thank you for using that anatomy. Yeah. And big hit, and this is the first of four films between Pryor and Wilder. We'll get to the best in a moment. I remember seeing Silver Streak in the theater. Also saw the next film from 1977, Greased Lightning, based on the story of Wendell Scott, the first black auto racer. And good film. It's a good, solid. Michael Schultz directed it, who also directed him in Car Wash, another African-American director of note. Pam Grier's in it. Julian Bond has a cameo. and Beau Bridges is in it as the good white guy.
Yeah.
But also, you know, just a guy trying to become a race car driver in the South in the 50s. But it's a comedy drama, but it's one where he did not have to resort to stand-up shenanigans in this. He actually just plays a character.
So did Julian Bond use his famous line from Saturday Night Live?
Not going to do that. Not going to say that. And Garrett Morris is looking at me, so no, we're not doing that. Then 1977 teams. Was that Michael Schultz? Yes, it was. So that same year. Of working with Schultz on Greased Lightning, he teams up with Michael Schultz again for Which Way Is Up, where he plays three roles.
And the one scene I definitely remember in Which Way Is Up was when he's messing around with the one woman, and he's laying on his stomach, and the lady takes the vibratory device.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, and first time we'd seen a device like that in a movie, at least for us,
Yeah. Maybe.
This is a remake of an Italian film from the 70s. Lynette McKee is in this, Margaret Avery. Orange picker Leroy Jones inadvertently becomes a union leader and is forced out of town, leaving behind his sexually obsessed father, Rufus, played by Pryor, and spouse Anna May. He also plays a preacher in this. Big shock.
Yep.
So, yeah.
An eye for an eye and a baby for a baby.
Yep. And this is another one where it's not a stand-up routine. The fact that Pryor wanted to play multiple characters, and I think it kind of caught folks off guard.
Yeah.
But it's worth checking out. It's worth checking out for that.
It's actually not that bad.
No, it's not. So, 1978, Blue Collar. I love Blue Collar.
See, I never saw Blue Collar.
See, so it's written. It's the film directing debut of Paul Schrader, who had already given us. He had written the screenplay for Taxi Driver, The Yakuza, and it's three auto workers: Richard Pryor, Yaphet Kotto, Harvey Keitel. Set in Detroit in the 70s, very close to my heart, and three union auto workers who are just trying to make a living. And they decide they're going to rob their union hall, and instead of finding money, they find a book with numbers and ledgers, and what are they going to do about it? And it's a film where, and there's a great commentary track by Schrader on this. Schrader clashed with all three of them, especially Pryor, and because apparently Schrader told each actor that they were the star of the film. Not good planning.
No.
But it does use some of Pryor's comedic skills in a drama. There's a great moment where he's bawling out the union leaders at a meeting, and he's literally standing on his feet just riffing. There's also one where he has the tax guys coming in to, you know, hit him about back taxes that he owes. But there's some great stuff in this, and it still holds up today, especially for 1978. It addresses the idea of unions and the bosses getting management getting a little too close. A little too comfortable for a lot of people.
Yeah.
and it hasn't stopped. This is 1978. Get your stuff together. So,
like I said, the more things change, the more they stay exactly the same.
Revisit this. And Schrader's, of course, this is a guy who would later direct films like Hardcore and First Reformed a few years back, Affliction. You know, The Card Counter came out this year. If you need a story of a guy, most of the time, a white guy, going down a downward spiral, this is it. So, but in this case, it's three guys. Yeah. So that's 1978. That same year, another cameo coming off the bench very quickly, The Wiz.
Yeah, because he played the Scarecrow. No.
He played the Wiz.
That's right, he played the Wiz. That's right.
Michael Jackson played the Scarecrow. Oh.
And it was Nipsey Russell who played the Tin Man.
And Ted Long, who was in the original Broadway production, played the Lion. Mabel King and Lena Horne. And let's not forget, Diana Ross is playing a school teacher. She's not playing a 14-year-old farm girl from Canada. And I think that gets forgotten.
Diana Ross is playing a school teacher from Kansas City, not a 14-year-old girl from Kansas.
In this case, New York. But yeah. So it's directed by Sidney Lumet, who's given us everything from 12 Angry Men to Network. Every dollar is on the screen. It's a visual wow. It hits you. It's visually.
Yeah, because at the end of the movie, doesn't Mabel King get flushed down the toilet?
Something like that.
Yeah.
But he comes off the bench for, I think, again, it feels like a day's work and does what he has to do, and that's that. But The Wiz is underappreciated, and it's a great score. It's a really good soundtrack.
No, just come on. He's on down the road.
There you go. 1978. So the third film he did in 1978 is another one where it was a small bit, but he was in, of course, California Suite with Bill Cosby as two doctors who wind up competing. And the competitions get more and more physical and more comedic. So, and yes, they worked together, and then that led to the imitations of Cosby and other stuff that Eddie Murphy would talk about. 1979, another cameo, plays the balloon vendor in the Muppet movie.
Yep.
One day shooting, probably, so there's that. Played God in, G-O-D, in God We Trust, or Give Me That Primetime Religion, also from 1980. And then his big step up in 1980, Stir Crazy.
Yeah.
Yep. Directed by Sidney Poitier, the best collaboration between Pryor and Wilder. Two guys in prison. Bob and Tom have been making these jokes ever since. So.
You see, but there's one part of the movie I couldn't understand to save my life.
What's that?
Okay, I know they were found guilty, or found not guilty, at the end of the movie, but they also escaped from prison.
Right. And then, the guys get caught. I'm sorry, spoiler alert on a 40-year-old film. But as they're escaping, the other guys who did the job get caught.
Yeah, they get caught.
So from your legal mind, I'm sure you would have some continuity issues.
I'm like, I don't understand. Like, wait a second, but they're still technically guilty, so they're escaping from prison, which is a crime. Okay, show me more Grossberger. Okay.
There you go. Okay, yep, very good. But that's a lot. I think there's a lot of let the camera roll and let Gene and Richard do stuff. So, and it works. It works. 1981, Bustin' Loose. Richard Pryor with Cicely Tyson and a bunch of kids on a bus. And this is the start of trying to soften his image, maybe.
You see, but I actually liked Bustin' Loose.
Bustin' Loose is fine.
Like when he's driving the bus and one kid comes up and he says, "Hey, yo, man, I want to drive the bus." Like, no, like get back there. He's sticky.
Well, he's because the kid says, "You know, I can whoop tail I could whoop some too. You know what I was in jail for?
Murder.
Yeah. So kind of R-rated comic in a PG movie with a bunch of kids. So
and then at the end of the movie, the Ku Klux Klan.
Yeah, it makes fun of that too, and they help move the bus. And
I don't think we're gonna tell anybody about this.
They get dirty and all that. So, okay, now we're starting to get into wonky. So, 1982, a film, I remember seeing this in the theater, and I knew there was like two films in one, Some Kind of Hero, where he plays a Vietnam veteran. This is the film he meets Margot Kidder on. So the first half is him in Vietnam at a POW camp with Ray Sharkey. They try to squeeze some humor out of it. But it's still POW camp.
What humor is there in a Vietnam?
Well, then he comes home and his wife leaves him, and he finds out he's broke, and he winds up having to pull some crimes. He meets a prostitute played by Margot Kidder. It's really tonally weird because, and I know the studio wanted a comedy, and this is really a drama with some forced comedy inside. I'd like to see what the original script looks like, and it's also based on a novel. I someday should read that and see how that goes. So yeah, that was, and I know that frustrated Pryor. Same year, 1982, The Toy.
But Jackie Gleason.
He gets bought and sold by Jackie Gleason.
Wow, the more things change.
And yeah, working with kids again. And then 1983, your year, you own it because I gave it to you, Superman 3.
Yes.
You love Superman.
I love
you
Superman.
You love Richard
Pryor. But
not
but,
this.
But mixing Superman and Richard Pryor is like mixing butter and axle grease.
Yep.
Without changing the flavor, it tastes just like axle grease.
And just because you use the plot in Office Space does not make this a good film.
No,
and
no.
He got a lot of money for it. And
it was just so
bad. It's really bad.
Because
really
Superman
bad.
Turns into a bad guy, and they try to invent the kryptonite. And then Superman's fighting himself in the junkyard. And
then Pryor shows up. It's like, meanwhile, in a completely different movie elsewhere. I mean, there's like one real connection between Pryor and Christopher Reeve. And, yeah.
And at the very end of the movie, when the whole place blows up, they shake hands. They do the handshake. They do the black hand grip.
Yeah.
And Richard Pryor says, "Thank you, brother." It's just like, oh, my God, this is so bad.
Where's the pimp from the first film? Say, Jim.
That's a bad outfit.
He should have been in this
Woo.
One. This is rough. This is really rough. And, and I gave you 4. I don't expect you to ever watch 4.
No, I can't remember.
When was the last time you watched Superman 3? I know I gave it to you. I know you didn't watch it.
It was like on TBS. I watched like a few minutes of
so
it.
You wanted to remind yourself. It's like Circus Peanuts.
Yeah. It's like,
is it really? Yeah, this is bad.
This is bad. Like, I can't watch this. This is, oh my God. This is
rough.
This movie hurt my feelings.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. So, and, 1985, Brewster's Millions with him and John Candy.
Which
Walter
actually,
Hill directed the comedy, and it's based on another, it's a remake basically, but he's a minor league pitcher who he has to spend X amount of money in order to get way amounts of money.
And that was actually one of my mother's favorite
really?
Richard Pryor films, yeah? She loved Brewster's Millions.
Okay. All right. That's why, and this time he's the lead and John Candy gets to be the comedic sidekick. So take that. All right, 1986.
And you can't buy something of inherent value and destroy it.
Yeah, there's a lot of weird, convoluted rules to it because it's a movie. 1986, his directing effort, JoJo Dancer, Your Life is Calling. If you've not seen the second Pryor concert film, then you'll get something out of this.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if you're a big concert, it's the other frustrating thing is he had a production company for a while, Indigo, with Jim Brown, and I remember learning this from documentaries. They only put out 2 films: JoJo Dancer, Your Life is Calling, and Richard Pryor, Here and Now.
Hmm.
I remember seeing footage of him in a press conference saying, we want original scripts. Apparently he turned down Purple Rain. Apparently he turned down The Color Purple. And the only 2 films were those 2.
Wow.
Could have had something there, but no. So JoJo Dancer, it's, again, if you know nothing about Pryor and want to watch something that's based so not on Richard Pryor, but it is, here you go.
Yep.
But the stand-up does it better. 1987, Critical Condition.
Actually, I saw that in the movie theater
in
Germany.
He poses as a doctor. Yeah, yep. did it? How did the Germans like it?
Well,
how
it was,
did
it
you
was,
like
well,
it?
Well, it was on American base. So
okay.
So the movie's always come out about 6 months after.
It left 5 months ago.
Yeah, left 5 months ago. And I just remember like, what in the world?
Yeah.
Is this? And
got a lot of money for it, I'm sure.
Yes, he did.
Yes, he did.
And he even got $4.50 of my money.
And also got $4.50 for the 1988 comedy, Moving. Yeah, that's rough. Moving his family across country, and Dana Carvey, then unknown Dana Carvey, drives his car, and he's a husband and a father, and moving's hard.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Kind of reminds me of Ghost Dad.
Out around the same time.
Yeah, just a really bad.
That's a drive-in from hell.
Yeah,
those two are showing.
Really bad, like, these are, like, African-American actors who I love and respected, and they're starting to make the really bad.
Yep.
Bad films.
1989, did 2 films. Of course, See No Evil, Hear No Evil, which is not as good as Stir Crazy, but still pretty decent.
Yeah.
He's blind and Wilder's deaf, and they have shenanigans, and there's an unknown Kevin Spacey and Joan Severance. I still borrow the line. I don't know what you're looking for, but it's a little to the right being searched. Yeah, that one's not bad. It's probably the last sting of hope because 1989, Harlem Nights.
Harlem Nights was god-awful horrible. That was the worst film.
When you have three generations of comedy, three generations of African-American comedy, and Murphy's directing, and this is the best you can come up with.
And what annoyed me the most about the movie, because I couldn't finish watching it, because
it wanted to be The Sting. It wanted to be all three of their stand-up routines. It wanted to be...
And all I can remember is just Della Reese. Every other word was F this and S that.
And did she get paid by the F?
Like, this one must have been paid by the curse word. Like, I'm
maybe.
Sorry. Like, I told my parents, we were all watching it together. Because you go to the video store and rent the movie.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And so my mother and father wanted to see Harlem Nights because, you know, Richard Pryor, Eddie Murphy, Red Fox,
Della Reese.
Della Reese, and you know, Jasmine Guy from A Different World.
How were your folks with Della Reese saying what she said?
My mother just kind of, what?
What?
And my father kind of laughed a little bit, but I was like, I'm sorry, Mom, Dad, I can't watch this.
It felt like she was trying to do her version of Bertha.
Yeah.
But she's not Bertha.
And the movie's actually even worse on regular television.
Oh, of course it is. Oh, it's one of the worst, yes.
Because they have to beep out every other word. It's just like, this is just God. Oh, like, oh my God. Ugh.
Yeah, that's a
like,
rough.
Where's my Superman 3? Because I can't watch it.
There is so much in this, and it just doesn't deliver. It's really unfortunate. That's 1989. 1991, the final collaboration between Pryor and Wilder, Another You. Pryor's starting to look sick. It's starting not looking well, and we knew things were... But yeah, this is also... They got a big paycheck, and there's that. Now, I've not seen, also in 1991, The Three Muscatels. Narrator, wino, and bartender.
What, no Ripple?
We go back to this. Richard Pryor stars in the parody of The Three Musketeers, who follows a co-ed who falls asleep while reading the book and dreams about a trio of swashbuckling heroes. I don't think this even played in the States.
No.
So there is that, and we're wrapping things up. I know, Abdul, you're looking at your watch.
The thing about like Richard Pryor is he's a brilliant comedian and not a bad actor, but he kind of overstayed just a little bit too long. As opposed to, like, you know, maybe winding down, just doing the Las Vegas.
Well, you know, and I think also trusting a director. There are a number of comics we could talk about that they had filmmakers that would say, let the camera roll and just do what you do. You know, I think of Adam Sandler and Punch Drunk Love, where he actually had to work. Spanglish is another one. There have been those. You can make the list of film performances by stand-up comics. And Pryor's got a couple of them in there, but man, I think it's getting offered a ridiculous amount of money, and then also being expected to go and do what you do. And he had trust issues. This is not news to anybody if you've followed his career. It's kind of the great what could have beens. Got two more films. 1996 played Jimmy the Gravedigger in Mad Dog Time. It's another disappointing mob comedy that had half the Screen Actors Guild in it. It's directed by Joey Bishop's son. Not good. And finally, in a wheelchair, had one scene as Arnie in David Lynch's Lost Highway, 1997. That's it. He had a couple episodes of Malcolm and Eddie and Norm and Chicago Hope and Martin, and that's kind of it. So, whew.
It's like a 30-year movie film career.
Yep, and probably more misses than hits. But kind of like Robin Williams. I think Williams was the same way, where seeing him on television was unlike anything else.
Yeah.
And seeing his stand-up was unlike anything else. Thank you, HBO, for Robin Williams and George Carlin specials back when we were kids. But, you know, and Pryor had already set that standard with the films, especially with the first film, and then, strengthened it with Sunset Strip. But Williams was another one where he would get a lot of money. High Club Paradise, High Popeye, and be expected to just riff. And it wasn't until films like Awakenings or Dead Poets Society or Good Morning Vietnam is a great example of being dramatic and being able to use your comedic skills.
But you know what? I still love Mrs. Doubtfire.
No, that's fine. That's fine. It's that generation's Tootsie.
Can make me look older? How much older? Shelley Winters older? Shelley MacLaine older? So. What's the difference? Scotch tape and red hair dye? How about Joan Collins? I don't think I have the strength.
No, it works because it's and but yeah, that's another example of
let him be him.
Let him be him, or you know, trusting a director, or maybe not always taking the big pay. Like Superman 3.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I know. It's frustrating. So that's...
It makes the teeth itch.
Yes. So that's it, friends. That's the films of Richard Pryor right there. So we got a few more minutes because I know Abdul's got a book, but I've also started the box set, The Essential Films of Melvin Van Peebles.
No.
And so I revisited...
Not Mario, but Melvin.
Not Mario, although Mario's film Badass is in this, and I haven't watched that in a while. I do remember... Badass making my top 10. It is a Valentine to Mario's dad, Melvin, about the making of Sweet Sweetback's Badass song. You've seen it, right?
No.
You really?
Uh-uh.
Oh, I might have to make you borrow this.
Okay.
Rated X by an all-white jury, starring Melvin Van Peebles as a man on the run from the law who is they were going to accuse him of a crime he did not commit.
Big shocker.
I know. And then he fights off the police and sets off running. And friends, I've made fun of Lord of the Rings for the amount of walking in that film. Those are three. There's a lot of running in Sweetback.
Oh, wow.
But it is not only influential as far as African-American filmmaking, but independent filmmaking. This is one of the biggest money-making independent films of all time if you do the, you know, cult ratio and all that stuff. So, but Van Peebles got to make his film his way. And it shows aspects of Los Angeles we don't see. And not just the gambling shows, but the live sex shows that are happening in basically your house. Not a nightclub, a house.
Wow.
Yeah, there's that. And so him running through the desert and running through the city and the police after him and other folks are after him. It's, you know, there was, and if you thought there was a lot of motorcycle riding and Easy Rider, there's a lot of running and Sweetback. So, but it is a piece of cinematic time of its time. And I think it still works. And Earth, Wind, and Fire get to do an early soundtrack. That being said, I'd always heard about but had never seen from 1967 his first film shot in France, The Story of a Three-Day Pass, which stars Harry Baird as an African-American soldier stationed in France who gets... the film, and meets a white French girl. And there is... aspects of the French New Wave. Van Peebles was living in France at the time. He tried to get a job in Hollywood and according to him, was offered a janitor's job. So he went to France and started making short films. And the meet cute between Harry Baird and Nicole Berger is really nice. They have some nice chemistry together. The film owes a lot to the French New Wave, where it's cinema verite. So it's a lot of following and, you know, a lot of medley of music.
A lot
and
of ennui.
Yes, right. We're not doing Jefferson in Paris. So. But
is it what's facing the chair and is going across? Well,
and there's also a recurring bit early on because he's getting a 3-day pass because he has more commitments coming with his new promotion. And there's a lot of scenes with him in the mirror and the reflection is being his worst self and saying, you're being a good Negro. You're getting this because you're getting this. And the relationship's not going to last long. And you really want it to. And there is a harsh reality when the 3-day pass is over, not just for the relationship, but when he returns to the base. But it's a really nicely done film. And this is the film that led him to getting the job. He had a 3-picture deal at Columbia, only made one film, Watermelon Man. And we'll get to that. Probably on next week's program, but yeah, it's so far the collection that's put out by Criterion, and it's got a slew of extras, and I will get to those. But yeah, I'll be talking about this for the next few weeks.
So, is there a scene with him playing chess with death?
That's no, it's not that. Well, that's Swedish. That's not the French New Wave. No, it's not that. The other. And Harry Baird, I had to look. He also was in The Italian Job and did a number of films overseas, from British Guinea, and then died in London back in 2005. The hold on, I'm hot scrolling action here at Film Sociology. The other films in the collection from Melvin Van Peebles, as I mentioned, Sweet Sweetback's Badass Song, Story of a 3-Day Pass, The Watermelon Man. And the musical "Don't Play Us Cheap" from 1972. So we'll talk about that as well as his son Mario's film about the making of Sweetback called Badass.
Wasn't Mario Van Peebles in the TV series Sunny Spoon?
Yes, he was.
Steel or something like that.
And he of course has the famous cameo of being at the beginning of Sweetback, where he's playing the younger version of his father's character, deflowered at a brothel.
Alrighty.
At a very young age. So. There you go, friends. Anyway, that is out on Criterion, and we'll be talking about that on future film sociologies. All right, friends, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
No, the show's not ending, but I know Abdul likes to hear Soylent Green and Zardoz. So what's happening over at Indie Politics?
Just basically, we're kind of in that lull period.
Which is why you're doing a play.
Which is why I'm doing a play right now.
Don't ask Abdul to do theater in election years.
Yeah, the election years, though, can't do election years. But not election years, we can do it. Actually, though, like I said, we're looking forward to Elizabeth Rex, looking forward to working with you. Again, looking forward to being Her Majesty's Chief of Staff.
Secret Service.
Oh, my gosh.
Yep.
Just literally, I'm running on stage and off stage and out of breath most of the time. So I actually get my steps in.
Holding a spear.
Exactly.
No, a staff.
Yeah, no spear chucking.
Wow, that's MASH. We're not doing that. IndieBardFest.com. There you go. Abdul, always a pleasure.
Hey, thank you, my friend.
You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. All right, friends, before we grab a pencil, let's see what is playing around in the area. We start, at the Tibbs Drive-In. It's TBA, so check out the Tibbs website for information there. Over at the Skyline Drive-In in Shelbyville, yes, Halloween Kills opens this weekend. So Halloween Kills plus Halloween 2 from 1981. And apparently there's going to be one more event, but you'll have to look into that. Wednesday, October 27th, for you trauma fans out there, The Toxic Adventure plus Sergeant Kabuki Man NYPD. That's happening at the Skyline Drive-In in Shelbyville. Over at IU Cinema on Thursday, October 21st, a special virtual event at 7 o'clock, a conversation on Islands of Resilience, Voices Making Waves. Join us for a virtual conversation with interactive Q&A with filmmakers Matisla Freshwater and Marina Alfoga McCartney and IU doctoral candidate Natasha Suula. I apologize for butchering your names. That's happening at IU Cinema on Sunday, October 24th at 1 o'clock as a part of the Sunday Matinee Classics, Heaven Can Wait from 1943. Tuesday, October 26th at 7 p.m. Is the 2019 drama Dark Waters. Lawyer Rob Billett is scheduled to be present for an introduction. And Sunday, Halloween, October 31st at 1 o'clock, programmed by IU Cinema house manager Will Eltzroth, the extended cut of Battle Royale from 2000. That is a staff selection. So that's your Halloween at IU Cinema. At the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin on Friday and Saturday, 2 and 7:30 p.m., Stanley Kubrick's The Shining. On October 17th at 2 p.m. on Sunday, Mayberry Man from this year, 2021. That's, of course, a story filmed around Indiana. An arrogant movie star is sentenced by a small-town judge to attend a week-long festival celebrating the Andy Griffith Show. Friday and Saturday, October 22nd and 23rd at 2 and 7:30 p.m. from 1987, The Monster Squad. And then Sammy Terry will be there on Saturday, October 23rd from 2 to 4 p.m. on the stage near the courthouse, or from 4 to 7 p.m. in front of the Historic Art Craft Theater. He will introduce the Monster Squad screening that evening on Saturday, October 23rd. 2 and 7:30 p.m., October 29th and 30th, Beetlejuice. So there is that. All of that is happening at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin. Of course, the Heartland Film Festival wraps up on the 17th. Go to heartlandfilm.org for all the tickets and information over there. Over at the Can-Can, of course, they are hosting events of the Heartland Film Festival. On October 17th is the documentary The Rescue. 18th, 19th, and 21st, the horror film Possession. October 20th and 21st, the Tom Petty documentary Somewhere You Feel Free. October 22nd through the 24th, they're showing Clue the movie. and October 25th and 27th, Donnie Darko. All of that is happening at the Can Can. Go to cancanindie.com for all the information there. And as I mentioned, this Saturday night at 7 o'clock, Films at the Fort, an October double feature, Hocus Pocus at 7 o'clock, Night of the Living Dead, the original George A. Romero at 10 p.m., separate ticket needed for both films. I will be there hosting as well as Jay Hemphill, so go check that out. All right, friends, grab a pencil. Let's find out what you've been watching on over the past week. We start on Twitter. Scott, who writes The Color Purple and The Conjuring. Thank you, Scott. Over to Facebook. Britt writes The Haunted Mansion, News of the World, Venom, My Little Pony, A New Generation, Venom again. She wrote this. Peter Rabbit 2, The Runaway, and The Many Saints of Newark. Scott writes Hooper with Burt Reynolds, J. Michael Vincent, Sally Field, Brian Keith, and Robert Klein. Yes, Scott, I saw that in the theater. Great Valentine to the Hollywood stuntmen directed by Hal Needham. Probably Hal Needham's best film. One with more story than, say, Smoking the Bandit or Cannonball Run. So very good. Thank you there, Scott. Moving on, Evan Dossie writes Lamb, which was at Can Can, I believe. Lou Harry writes The Pirate, Dune Part 1. Yes, I saw you at Dune. The WNET recording of Uncle Vanya with the great J.O. Sanders. That's cool. I like J.O. Sanders, so I'm glad he got to do that that show. Gretchen writes, we've been chipping away at the Muhammad Ali documentary. It's really good. Amy writes, The Addict's Wake, 30th Heartland International Film Festival. Very good. Evan writes, Up. Andrew writes, Daniel isn't real. And Dan writes, I married a witch, The Fog, and Young Frankenstein. Joe writes, Horatio Hornblower, A&E series, 4 seasons. Cosmos from 1980. Abraham Lincoln, Omnibus, a James Agee's play from 1952, starring Royal Dano and Joanne Woodward. From a broadcast in 1955. FYI, this was my first introduction to the story of a fellow Kentuckian and started a lifelong interest and fascination with him and with American history. Well, very good, Joe. Joe also watched Uncle Tom's Cabin, The Four Flags of the Confederacy, and Lee at Gettysburg. Joe, I hope you typed that wrong, and I hope I corrected it, but you know which title. Michael writes The Many Saints of Newark. Megan writes Hocus Pocus, of course. Yes, it's October. JR writes Many Saints of Newark, The Thing, we don't know which one, and Midsummer. That's the Midsummer with an O, not Night's Dream. Kim writes In the Heights, and My Name is Pauli Murray, documentary. Kathy writes Chicago. Janet writes No Time to Die, Respect, The Many Saints of Newark, Muppet Haunted Mansion, The French Connection, and Danny Collins. Mary writes Bride of Frankenstein. Teresa writes Ocean's 8, Hidden Figures, Life of the Party, and Ford versus Ferrari. I love this. So then Sean writes Psycho 4, The Beginning. And then Teresa writes, oh, and Hocus Pocus. Apparently she doesn't have edit on her phone as far as posting. That tickles me. Jared writes Lethal Weapon Binge, all 4. You could have stopped at 2, Jared. Just saying. Eric writes House, the movie, The Changeling, Ghost World, and Office Space. Good job there, Eric. Carrie writes Vivo. Britt writes Promising Young Woman, Perfume, The Story of a Murderer, Beauty and the Beast, Moana, The Live-Action Aladdin, and The Princess and the Frog. John writes Dear Evan Hansen. Stephen writes I, Vettelini. Hey, Federico, how you doing there? Check out my review of the Fellini box set. It's on the Film Yap. Judy writes Copenhagen, Shock and Awe. Lila writes, introduce my oldest to Psycho. It was her second Hitchcock film. He still got it because she slept with the lights on. Wow. And the family film was Tim Burton's Sleepy Hollow. Very good. Adding, her first Hitchcock film was Rear Window. Saw it over the summer. Very good. And then Mark asked, asking how old the daughter was, asking for the grandfather of a 10-year-old granddaughter who seems nowhere near ready for Psycho. They're all different, friends. All the kids are different as far as what you watch and when. So be careful. Abby writes Knives Out, The Best of Enemies, Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard, American Assassin, and Captain America Winter Soldier. Lisa writes Starfish. All right, Michelle writes, how about films I did virtual performances of? Divergent and X-Men First Class. Yes, future Mrs. Falstaff, my lovely otter, you can write that. You did. I read it. Congratulations. Darlene writes Cruella again. Saw it in the theater opening night and watched it on the plane this week. Loved it. Kathleen writes The Maid. Jenny writes Hocus Pocus. Y'all can see it on Saturday. Roger writes, watched Charade last night. Always entertaining. And last week, The Many Saints of Newark. Jeff writes 127 hours. I will not do the rest of this thread with Jared and Jeff. Michael writes Horror Express, The Bat, and Frankenstein. Alan writes Willy's Wonderland. JD writes Malignant. John writes, I picked three duds this week. Gangster Squad, Sean Penn ruined this. Cry Macho, Crying for My Time Back. And The Many Saints of Newark, with two thumbs down emojis. Now you have to give Siskel and Ebert's family money, I believe. He also watched A Long Good Friday and Cars. Okay. Moving on. Nikki writes, this is where I leave you. Kurt writes, October Sky and On an Island with You. Molly writes, Malignant. Andrea writes, Jackie and the Revenant. Jessica writes, The Devil Inside, The Possession, Malicious, Intersect, Await Further Instructions, and Separation. Eric writes, Chris Marker's Sans Soleil. Rob writes, The Many Saints of Newark. Frankly, I was disappointed. Chris Lloyd writes, Cripes, it may be hard to recall. The Last Duel, The Velvet Underground, Dune, Spencer, Belfast, The Alternate. I'm probably missing a couple. So, yeah, check out the Film Yap, as well as the Midwest Film Journal and Medium Cool Podcast, and anything Richard Probst writes. I think I got most, and other members of the IFJA who post things and write things. There you go. David writes The Many Saints of Newark, No Time to Die, Muppet Haunted Mansion, Attack of the Hollywood Clichés on Netflix, Promising Young Woman, Dear Evan Hansen, and Squid Game. Helen writes The Woman in the Window and No Time to Die, the first Bond movie I've ever seen, much to the horror of every Brit I've told. For the record, friends, Helen lives in London now, so there's that. Hang in there, monkey face. Doug writes the original Child's Play from 1988. This is Francis X. This is Francis X. Bushman, Scarface from 1932, and the 2008 A Raisin in the Sun. Sean writes No Time to Die. Stephanie writes Ghostbusters, Getting Ready for Afterlife. Mark writes News of the World. Joni writes Vita and Virginia. Michael writes, I watched the original European theatrical version of Twin Peaks. If you love the TV series, this is cool to watch as it has a few different scenes in it and an alternate ending. Thank you, Michael. Lisa writes, I watched a Lifetime Network movie about a murderous twin with my mother-in-law. It was a movie. Thank you, Lisa. John writes No Time to Die. Glenn writes Dune. I know, Glenn, I was there. Thomas writes All About Eve. Melissa writes Come On, Come On, Halloween Kills, The Owners, The Manor, and The Last Duel. Melissa writes No Time to Die at the drive-in in October. Good times. Way to do that. Yeah, get your drive-in days where you can, friends. Joellen writes The Picture of Dorian Gray. The first time I saw this movie was with my mom. I was maybe 10 or 11 and it was on television. My mom had seen it at a movie theater and thought it was really good. It was. So was the popcorn she fixed for us. I was the oldest and this was a special treat. Despite the wickedness of the movie, it brings good memories. Joellen, that's why we go to the movies. Thank you. Rachel writes My Hero Academia, Heroes Rising, and 9 to 5. Millicent writes No Way Out, the 1980s political thriller. Yes, the Kevin Costner one. Kate writes Young Frankenstein. Jeff writes Army of the Dead. David writes Black Klansman. Mallory writes Labyrinth. Hey, Mallory. Daniel writes Priest from 1995. Bad Education, Woman on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown, All About My Mother, Talk to Her, Muppet's Haunted Mansion, Quantum of Solace, and Young Frankenstein. Emily writes the recent Tomb Raider and Tomb Raider Cradle of Life. Hadn't seen the newer one yet, but it was a decent adaptation of the newer game it was based on. Mixed emotions about the change in plot, but I can see the reasoning. Older one, much flashier, but also very in spirit of the older games. Very different Tomb Raiders, of course, but you can see the shared spirit. Thank you, Emily. or Frida Fillmore, as I know you. Jed Bryan, the new unlisted owner director's cut that just dropped yesterday on Amazon. That's his film. Had to watch it with everyone else. Also, House of Wax from 2005. The Vincent Price version is my favorite, but the 2005 reimagining was an excellent standalone film. All I remember is Paris Hilton getting killed, and that's kind of how they promoted that movie. If you want to see her killed in a movie, there you go. Anyway, thank you, Jed, and yes, congratulations on the director's cut, now available on Amazon. Nikki writes, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, 1 and 2, The Woman in Black, Blades of Glory, Robin Hood, Men in Tights. Steven writes, Lansky. Kathy writes, Shogun and Sister Act. Missy writes, all I've seen this week is Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, and I've seen it so much, it's better than the Burton Taylor version. Missy Rump is my stage manager, friends, for Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf at the Cat in Carmel Thursday. It already happened Thursday. Friday, Saturday at 7:30 p.m., Sunday at 2 p.m. at the Cat. Go to indiebardfest.org for tickets and information. It's different than the movie, friends. That's all I can tell you. Dustin writes, Venom, Let There Be Carnage, and Dear Evan Hansen. James writes, Confessions of a Cheat from 1936, Mask of the Red Death at the Art Craft in Franklin. Thank you, James. I'm glad some folks got to see the Vincent Price movie on the big screen in Franklin. Lily writes, Big Night, Stanley Tucci. Loved it. Yes, Lily, that is my number one film I want Criterion to do a treatment of. So, and Jesse also writes, one of my favorites. Debbie writes, this is great. Jared watched Monster House and Hocus Pocus. I can't remember anything remarkable. We'll try again next week, Debbie. Thank you. And thank you for telling us what Jared watched. I have friends now telling me what other people have watched for this list. I love you all. Vince writes, on Saturday, I saw Venom, Let There Be Carnage, and then came home and watched Tombstone twice. Wow. Tony writes, No Time to Die. Carrie writes, No Time to Die, Queen Pins, and Lincoln the Vampire Hunter. Okay. Jay writes, we watched No Time to Die. We also watched Free Day with Jennifer Garner. Both were good. Devin writes, Dear Evan Hansen. Jesse writes, It Lives, Arsenic and Old Lace, Hard Paint, Coal Miner's Daughter, Mask of the Red Death, and Return to Oz. Leslie writes, Black Widow. Cassandra writes, Becoming Jane, Jurassic Park, Fallen Kingdom, Kingsman 2, and The Wedding Date. Michael writes, Little Shop of Horrors from 1960, The Informer, Key Largo, Spectre, Night of the Living Dead, and Carnival of Souls. Of course, Night of the Living Dead, Saturday, 10 o'clock at the Fort. Austin, Medium Cool Podcast, Awakenings from 1990, Malcolm X, Jurassic Park 1 through 3, and Creed 2. Rosanna writes, This Beautiful, Fantastic, Tom Wilkinson, of course. Jody writes, Village of the Damned. Michael writes, The Fog. Andy writes, The Original Dracula with the Kids. Hope to get through some more of the Universal Monsters by Halloween. Good for you, Andy. I remember Emma in her her Universal Monster phase as well. So glad you're doing that. Jamie writes, Muppet Haunted Mansion and Corpse Bride. Todd writes, Last night I watched two schlock grindhouse films, Nightmare in Wax starring Cameron Mitchell, whew, and Three on a Meat Hook. That's a title. Also saw No Time to Die in the theater, and one more bad film, Doomsday Machine. All right, thank you, Todd. Simone writes, Eyes of Tammy Faye. And finally, Abby writes, My Girl, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and Hocus Pocus. Thank you, everybody. So there you go, friends. There's a lot of titles out there, whether you watch them at home or you go out to Heartland or go to all the other individual spots that I mentioned. So there's plenty of good movies out there. So hope you get to experience some good films that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. All right, this time for sure, friends, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. Just a friendly reminder, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf happening Friday night and Saturday night at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday at 2 p.m. at the Cat Theater in Carmel. Get there early. Construction's ugly over there. Have dinner or lunch and a play. Go to indiebardfest.org for all the information. And then, yes, Saturday night at the Fort, Theater at the Fort, on the grounds of Fort Benjamin Harrison in Lawrence, I'll be hosting the screenings of Hocus Pocus at 7 p.m. as well as Night of the Living Dead at 10 p.m. Jay Hemphill will be there as well, and we're all in Elizabeth Rex, which opens at the Fort November 5th. So IndieBardFest.com for all the information. Anyway, hope to see you all this weekend. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan. Oh, and by the way, special note, if you go to the AV Club this week, there's a cute little interview with Mary Jo Feil of Mystery Science Theater fame, who's, of course, a part of this show's ending, like this.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What kind of parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!